Welcome to Cards Chat, the friendliest poker podcast in town from the world's number one poker community. Hey everyone, I'm your host, Robbie Straczynski. Thank you so much for joining us on episode number 117 of Cards Chat, the friendliest poker podcast in town. Today's guest is a WSOP bracelet winner and past WSOP main event final tablist from Canada. Cashing across a vast number of high-profile events over the past few years, this man has become one of our favorite players to watch, especially on the mixed game scene. He's got over $6.7 million in career live tournament earnings, but that stellar resume notwithstanding, this is a guy who's clearly still on the rise. On this episode, we'll get to know him a little better. Alex Livingston, welcome to the Cards Chat Podcast.
Thanks, Robbie.
How you doing?
Doing well. Yeah, I'm just here, as you can see behind me, I'm just here in Vegas playing some tournaments right now, staying at Encore. Yeah, things are good.
Very cool. Yeah, and for those who aren't watching on YouTube, I can confirm what I'm seeing is true. That's not just a Zoom background or anything. So we'll go through, you know, your poker career and, you know, perhaps divert off script depending on how you answer. As mentioned in the intro, Alex, you've got the WSOP bracelet, but perhaps, you know, casual poker fans probably know you best from being on their TVs for your third place finish in the 2019 main event. It was a career best score of $4 million. And for most folks, that's essentially a once in a lifetime kind of a run, a once in a lifetime kind of moment. It's been 3.5 years. In what way would you say that that deep run and the score changed your life?
Definitely my career highlight. It's kind of funny because I had been playing poker already professionally for 11, 12 years at that point and grinding it out day in and day out. But then when something like that happens, that's the one score that everyone sees as like kind of a validation. Oh, wow, you actually can make money doing this. Obviously, it was by far the biggest like single windfall I'd ever had with poker. But there's a big luck element to that. It's a really good tournament to run good in.
Right.
it changed everything. Directly after the tournament, was an amazing feeling. Obviously it was exciting, exhilarating. I had my friends there. In the months afterwards, I kind of felt a little bit, what am I going to do now? Because I wasn't sort of incentivized to grind the same games as much. I didn't feel that same, well, I don't need to keep trying to build my bankroll and make sure I can pay my expenses. And, you know, I just kind of moved into a slightly different tier with this result because it's not like I was not a millionaire before that tournament. So it took me a little time to recalibrate. And what ended up happening was I just decided to pursue some of these higher stakes tournaments and kind of challenge myself in a different way in poker. And that's been really fun.
Right. Okay. That's a good way of putting it. And I feel like the need to follow up on this question. You know, it's not often I speak to some main event winners, but not often I speak to someone slightly below that finish, a second or a third place. Second place, Dario Sammartino, he got $6 million. The winner, Hossein Ansan, got $10 million. I'm wondering, because of the degree to which your life was changed from that third place finish for $4 million, would it in any way, or to what extent would it have mattered to have, you know, one spot higher or two spots higher as far as just additional funds, or would it basically just be the same because it's so radically different than the life you were living before?
I think, especially the 10, I mean, that's just a lot more like longer term security, but I don't really think it would have drastically changed things. So I think once I hit, I don't know. I mean, like all the final table payouts were pretty huge. Yeah. And I pretty much stopped thinking about the money. I was just, you know, once we got to even like cashing for $300,000, $400,000, $500,000, I wasn't really thinking about the pay jumps in terms of money. I was just thinking about my strategy and what I wanted to do. And in terms of, I don't know, I don't consider myself like a hugely money driven person. So obviously it would have been nice to have the extra money. I mean, money is a tool that can buy you freedom and allow you to do the things you want to do. But I don't think it would have had a profound impact on the way my life went since the main.
Right. Well, that's nice. That's definitely a humble
Other time. Than obviously, along with the money, if you win, then there's a little bit extra responsibility in the community, and there's a little bit more of a, I don't know, recognition factor.
Sure.
But yeah, I don't think it would have been hugely different.
Well, that definitely speaks to, you know, you being a humble, down to earth kind of guy. But it's interesting the way you said it, of like, you stopped thinking about the money. Like, so many people all of a sudden start thinking about the money when it gets that deep, because just one spot makes such a massive difference. You know, like, again, look at the difference, second and third, at 2 million, that's like a couple years of results for a lot of people. And it's just, you know, one, like, it's just such an interesting answer, interesting perspective you've got. From that final table, like you said, you're focused on your strategy, your own play, and particularly when it got three-handed, are there any particular moments where you look back and you say, I'm really proud of my decision-making or the way I played this hand, or alternatively something else of like, that was a real brain fart, I should have done it differently, and maybe it worked out, but you know, you knew better as a player?
Yeah. I've gone back and looked at all the footage of the final table. So there is this one really critical hand where, what I actually didn't realize going into it, not that it matters, but I had the chip lead for like one or two hands. But I played this big pot where I opened the button with kings, and Dario called the big blind, and he check called the flop. And I bet huge on the turn, pot size bet on like queen 10, 7, 5, double flush draw. So there's no made straight, no made flush, but there's like all the draws in the world. I bet kings, and he check shoved. And my only regret here is I think I still would have ended up calling, because there's just so many draws available. And, you know, so you can discount some of the sets because he three bets them pre-flop and stuff like that. But my only regret is just not thinking about the spot. I didn't want to slow roll him, and I was pretty sure I was calling. I just kind of snap called. There's just this one little thing he did where before he went all in, he made like this triangle sign with his fingers, which there's this, you know, triangle all in button. And to me, like, my first instinct was, this looks more like two pair than it looks like a draw, just the way he's like so confident at doing this. But I just, you know, it was just like this, it would have just kind of been a crazy fold, I think, especially just given the way some of the other hands had played out. So I kind of just snap called it. So I guess my only regret is, you know, you're allowed to, you know, quote unquote, knit roll the guy when you're playing for millions of dollars, and like, you should just take your time on this decision. But I played the whole tournament pretty fast. So other than that, I mean, I looked at all the hands, and I was pretty happy with how I played. I mean, there's this queen's fold I made got a lot of commentary.
Yep. Sure. It's
pre-flop queen's fold, but you know, I would do it again in the same spot based on the ICM considerations and based on my assessment of my opponent's range in that spot. So yeah, I mean, I'm sure there were some small mistakes that maybe I'm glossing over, but I was mm-hmm. pretty happy with
that's pretty awesome to be able to look back with that type of confidence and also have been that much on your A game when it mattered the most. That's got to be a great feeling, like you said, you know, much more than the money, in a way of like, I performed when, you know, I was like in the clutch. That's a pretty damn awesome feeling.
I think I like that pressure feeling. I mean, I was pretty nervous between the days and on the breaks, like towards the end there, but I really enjoyed that moment at the table. And like, I do feel like it probably brought out my best game.
Nice. Well, your absolute best game was certainly on display during your bracelet win in 2022. That's the $1,500 seven card stud. I mean, a bit of a segue, but then maybe you were playing a little worse.
I mean, I just ran so hot in that turn. I mean, so day two, it was unbelievable. I was just pairing my door card on fourth or fifth every hand. And then once I built such a big chip lead, stud's one of these games where you can, on the bubble and the final table bubble and with the pay jumps, you can really get away with a lot. It's really hard for people to play back. Every hand's gonna have. It's not like in hold'em where you know 8-3 offsuit. It's just completely smashed by kings. I mean, yeah, there's still some spots like that in stud, but a lot of the time you have some equity, and if they don't have like a big pair, it's really hard for them to play back.
Right.
So I just kind of built this big lead, and then it was kind of hard for anyone to do anything as long as I was gonna open lots of pots, which I did.
You were heads up against Daniel Weinmann, obviously a pretty tough and pretty tricky opponent. Were there any particular spots that caused you difficulty in heads up play, or, you know, it was just you had the momentum and everything was going
your way? Yeah, Dan and I are friends, and we were playing props while we played heads up. It was like $500, and I slept a couple, but I ran so hot even in the props that I still made money. So honestly, I don't really remember the hands that much. We were just having fun. We were just like chatting and playing props. And I mean, obviously we were trying to beat each other, but I don't have like a ton of recollection of individual hands.
Well, you did obviously emerge victorious. You won the bracelet. How does the joy of that moment compare to the third place run deep in the main?
I mean, obviously I've always wanted to win a bracelet. It's a big deal in poker. It's kind of becoming less of a big deal now that they have so many bracelets and all these. I'm not a big fan of the online bracelets, but I mean, that's just my own personal bias too. I'm not really much of an online player. I just think that like there's too many bracelets now, but having said that, it's still really cool to win one. But no, I mean, the third in the main was way, way different and better. I think it was not just the money. I mean, the main event is just, it's just a different tournament. Like the hype for it, everyone, and not just saying like media and fans, but just the players are so excited to be there. And just the, you know, the feeling everyone has on beer level of day five when you've just bagged up for day six, like that's, there's like a palpable excitement in the air that you cannot replicate winning a $1,500 stud bracelet. So to me, going deep in the main is about as good as it gets in poker. Winning a bracelet was great. I mean, I plan to win more, so I guess that was just you got to win the first before you can win the second and third.
Right, exactly. Of the mixed games, is stud like your favorite in particular? Was it the special to win in stud specifically?
Stud eight or better is one of my favorite games, and probably one of my better games. Stud, I would actually say, is one of my worst games, and I've grown an appreciation for stud, not just because I won the bracelet in it, but just playing more of it, I'm realizing it's a very nuanced game, and it's pretty interesting to me. I know Phil Ivey, it's one of his best games. Was always a big fan of Ivey growing up, so I do have an appreciation for stud, but it would be neither one of my top three or four favorite games, nor one of my top three or four best games.
Are you able to sort of pick a favorite? Like, if you're going to win a bracelet, you would love for it to be in?
Well, the Poker Players Championship or the main event would be the, you know.
I meant a particular variant or a particular discipline.
So I'll say 8-game or 10-game, something like that, because those are my favorite mixes. But if it was just in one game of the 8 or the 10, I would say either PLO or stud eight or better. Yeah.
Nice. Is there anything particular about those games that you enjoy or find particularly challenging?
Well, PLO, I've just put so many hours into PLO, whether it's play or study, so many cash game hours, so much time and energy and thought into the game. So I guess that one would be more of just like a validation of that time that I've put in. And it being one of my better games, stud eight, I find is like a very creative game. There's definitely a big math component, but it's kind of, there's a feel aspect too. I mean, there's really math and feel in all these games. I don't know. I have a lot of fun playing stud eight. I've always enjoyed the games.
Nice. Cool. Well, you know, after you get to a certain, you know, level of financial comfort, I guess it, you know, does become much more, like you said, you have to take time off and realize, okay, let's just go to the higher stakes. And, you know, because that's where the, you know, quite frankly, the bigger and better competition is. You know, so money aside, I will say you're ranked number 13th on the all-time winnings list, according to Hendon Mob of Canada. So not necessarily the money aspect of it, but would it mean anything in particular to you to leapfrog anyone higher up on the list?
Yeah, I mean, Hendon Mob is kind of, you know, they don't track the buy-ins.
Of course.
So it's kind of a volume game to an extent. It's cool to have a high Hendon Mob rank, but that's definitely not my driver. My driver really, I mean, sure, the money, but I mean, I would say love of the game. And then also I would say I really enjoy competing at the highest levels, and knowing that I can, you know, hold my own against the best players in the world, which I would say I'm not fully there yet with No Limit Hold'em. I do feel like I'm there with PLO, probably not quite there with mixed games, but I want to be there in all three categories, and that's at least live. I don't have any dreams of being there online, but I want to be someone who can compete in the highest stakes tournaments in all three of those disciplines and feel like I have an edge. And that's kind of what's motivating me right now. But, you know, poker motivation changes. I'm single right now. If I had a wife and a baby or something like that, maybe I'd be more motivated by the money and just trying to do as much as I can to maximize the money. But right now I'm kind of motivated by my own desires to feel like I'm really one of the best in the world and playing at the highest levels, because that's where I have the most fun, I think.
For sure. And, you know, we're not going to ask you to give away any trade secrets or anything, but everyone knows, you know, the players at the top echelons of the game, it's not just that they, you know, play a lot, it's also that they're studying. Is there anything that you do specifically that characterizes your study or your study habits that you're particularly proud of, or alternatively that you want to get better at?
I think I definitely have a lot of room to improve. So for the first, I don't know, up until 2019, not after the main, but before the main. So sometime maybe early 2019, up until then, I did not do much in the way of formal study. I watched videos. I like Run It Once. I watched a lot of videos there. And I talked hands. I've always talked hands with people. But in terms of like solver based study, I didn't really do that, because I'd always felt like I can just figure it out. And I felt like I was more of a field player and this and that. And then I kind of realized that a lot of that was ego, and that to get to the highest level, you have to like recalibrate your technical understanding of the game, and then you can still be a field player. So when I play PLO cash games, I still think of myself primarily as a field player, but I have a much better understanding now of which combo does what and this and that. So I use Vision a lot, which is a Run It Once tool. I use Munker Solver for PLO. I use Pita Solver and Odin for Hold'em. I haven't done much in terms of ICM tools for tournaments, which I need to do more of. I watch replays of a lot of the PokerGo final tables, which I think is useful for both physical tells and for some of the ICM understandings, like when, you know, stacks or this, because things can get kind of goofy when you're a middle stack and you've got a couple really short stacks and there's a big pay jump. So you have to really alter your game. So I've watched a lot of, you know, the players do that. I've watched YouTube replays of WCOOP and Scoop final tables online, which are useful because a lot of those guys have very good technical understanding. But I could do more. I could certainly have just more structure to my routine, my study routine. It's kind of all over the map. It's kind of whatever I'm feeling at the time, which sometimes is good, but, you know, maybe you could benefit from a little more structure.
Are there any players who either historically or currently you look up to, not in like, oh, just accolades necessarily, but, you know, the way they've developed themselves as players, study habits of like, oh, it would be great if I had the tenacity of this person or something like that. Is there someone who you look up to in that way?
I would say, you know, somebody like Jason Kuhn is someone who's clearly worked extremely hard at the game and taken himself from being a good, you know, or, you know, maybe better than good, but a good online regular to being, you know, a world beater. I don't know Jason super well, but I get the impression that he's worked very, very hard on his game and in a number of different ways. I think he also does a lot of the, you know, he's a big gym guy. He's big on nutrition, physical health and all that. So I think he's doing it the right way. I guess that's the first name that comes to mind of someone who's just, probably gone about things in a very intelligent fashion to get to the top of the game.
I can imagine a lot lesser names that you could have said. So I think you picked a good one. Not that you need my confirmation, yeah, anything, I mean, but Jason Kuhn's pretty top notch, right? There. This was actually pretty incredible to look through the Hendon Mob and see that your bracelet win last year was actually your only first place finish in a Hendon Mob ranking tournament.
which kind of astounded me. But I guess historically you've been more of a cash game player, or there's been variance. Like, to what do you sort of attribute that?
Yeah, I've won like 3 or 4 smaller tournaments, but they just didn't make Penn Mob stuff in Halifax. But yeah, I was, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm not closing the deal heads up. Maybe it's some variance. I'm not really sure. I definitely, prior to 2019, I was mostly a cash game player who played tournaments during WSOP, or occasionally would go over to an EPT stop and again, mostly play cash, but play a couple of tournaments over there. So I definitely don't have quite the volume of tournaments as some of these guys, but at the same time, it would be nice to get a couple more wins, but I think I will. It's just a matter of when.
Sure. That wasn't meant to rub any salt in a wound. It was just a genuine question.
No, not at all. And I don't take it that way. But yeah.
And you have one more bracelet than I do anyway, so it's all good.
Right? Yeah. No, obviously getting wins is what you want, but right. Yeah,
for sure.
Definitely. I've got a few seconds and thirds, but
right.
Could add a few more wins for sure.
So you said around 2019 is when you sort of began doing, or 2020, a little bit more study this idea of like getting into the solvers, using the training tools. We all know, obviously, there was quite a lockdown period during the pandemic. We were all forced to not play live poker. What was that period like for you specifically as someone who thrives more and appreciates the live game more? How did you keep yourself busy, and poker wise, how did you keep your skills sharp?
Yeah, it was rough. I had a rough poker run during COVID for sure. I went on a really big heater in early 2021, and then I kind of lost it all back and some. In 2020, it was just kind of a slow bleed. But I did do a lot of study in that time. Certainly, I'm a pretty extroverted person, and I spent the first 2 months of COVID in a house by myself, actually. Well, I did have my brother and some friends visit kind of halfway through, but I was kind of isolated. This house I bought in rural Nova Scotia, but I wanted to be out there rather than in an apartment in the city, just because we weren't really allowed to do much anyway. I got better at cooking. I got, you know, worked on my golf game. Just like chipping around in the yard and stuff. I guess that was, I had already started the study stuff in 2019, and it's not like I never studied before 2019, but it was, again, it was mostly like watching Run It Once and Talking Hands.
Sure.
So I definitely got more into vision. I bought a computer so I could get Monker Solver and PO Solver. And well, PO you can kind of run with less RAM, but Monker really, it takes up a lot of RAM. So I bought a computer specifically for that and really started doing some deeper work into studying PLO spots, hold'em spots.
For sure. Well, skills-wise and just, you know, financial security-wise, obviously you have the ability to basically play in almost any tournament that you want to. How do you decide which tournaments you're going to play in? What type of, you know, metrics are you looking for? It says, okay, I'm going to hop in there.
Yeah. So right now I'm really liking what Poker Go's doing with these studio events. They have all these series. They just had a mixed game series. There's a PLO one coming up starting in a couple of days. They have the US Poker Open right after that, which is a mix of Hold'em and PLO, mostly Hold'em. So I really, really like the atmosphere in there. Most of those tournaments are rake free for first bullet, free food. Everyone's pretty nice in there. It's a good just atmosphere. So I'm trying to play as many of those tournaments as I can, just sort of as a default. Now, when you get to like the 25K and 50K no limits, I might be a little bit more, I might skip a 25K no limit if I've been on a worse run. I might play a 50K no limit if I'm on a better run. So those tournaments, so like I'll play up to a 10K no limit pretty much anytime. And then I'll play up to a 25 or 50K PLO pretty much anytime. Same with a mixed game tournament. But with the Hold'em, where I consider my weakest of the three relative to the field, I'm a little bit more picky in the bigger ones.
Interesting. Here's one that I just thought of as you're answering the question. It's not often, you know, I get to speak to people who've played in like that mixed game series, just, you know, 10K after 10K after 10K of mixed game events. And one of the things that lots of us mixed game players, mixed game fans were like, oh, we wish it was televised. We wish we'd be able to, like, you know, fanboy this kind of thing and watch it. To what degree does that or does that not matter to you as a player of, like, the amount of coverage in the poker media that the tournaments that you're playing in, especially in the studio, get? Like, does it bother you?
I personally prefer when they're televised because I sell, you know, some pieces to friends back home, and it's fun for them to be able to tune in and watch it. It's fun for me to be able to go back and see what maybe I did right or wrong and what my opponents did right or wrong. So certainly it adds some value to me when they do televise it. And I wish they did for the mixed game, at least for the main event. And I hope they do for the mixed main event next time.
Right.
I hope they do for the, you know, some of the PLOs going forward. I know they're not streaming those either. But having said that, I mean, it's not really going to impact my decision whether I play or not. I'm going to probably just play regardless. But it's a perk, yeah.
Right. Well, I do think that they were pretty pleased. Spoke to my buddy Tim Duckworth over there, the commish. And I do think that they were very, very pleased with the turnouts and that, you know, maybe not this. I mean, by the time folks are listening to this one, the PLO series is going to be going on. But the ones later on this year and next year, I do think that we'll all get to see inside the studio and watch all these mixed game, you know, hotshots strut their stuff on the felt. About a year ago, you notched a huge score at a really tough final table, you know, in the background over there at the Win Millions.
Yeah.
You took on Vanessa Cade. Yeah, you know, a bunch of Canadians there. There's Vanessa Cade, Tony Sinistage, Isaac Kempton, part of the final four. That must have been quite an experience. I mean, again, you've obviously been, you know, end of the main event. You've won a bracelet. What's it like playing against a final four, being part of a final four like that?
Yeah, that was right after my online downswing. So it was like really, really good timing. Felt like I needed the money. And you know, sometimes when you need it the most, you perform the best. And obviously, again, still some run good in there. I got deuces in against Jax with 16 left and had deuce for my tournament life. So, you know, free rolling from there. It was an interesting final table. A lot of different play styles. It was my first time playing with Isaac, and he's a really unique player. He's very crafty, and he's like kind of in. He feels like he's in every pot and trying to do something. So you have to always kind of figure out what he's doing this time. Vanessa put me in a really tough spot, like I don't know, three or four hands into the final table, where she was the chip leader and I was second in chips, and she put me all in on the river. And I folded, but it was just like this unexpected, crazy kind of hand. Where I didn't expect to be playing a big pot like that, you know, a few hands into the final table.
Right.
But it was a lot of fun, of course. Yeah. And I was happy with the result.
Sure. Well, if folks want to learn a little bit more about other spots Vanessa Cade has put people in, I got to give the shout out to episode number 41, where she was our guest right here on the Cards Chat podcast. Got a good 116 other episodes for you folks to listen to and to watch. So after you finish this great one with Alex Livingston, be sure to listen or watch those. WSOP, you know, it feels like it's kind of just around the corner, a few months away. Summer schedule's been released. Do you have your sights set on any particular events? Are you thinking maybe I want to chase POY or, you know, do you want to like kind of have sort of a balanced range of just pick and choose a few spots and, you know, relax and work on meditation in between?
I'm not really a relaxed guy training. I'll probably play everything. And when I say everything, I'm not quite as intense as like Dan Zak and Sean Deeb. I don't necessarily play every $400 to $1,000 no limit tournament just because they don't really excite me that much. So maybe I'm missing out on some chance for POY because of that, but I am unlikely to miss many 10K mixed game events. I'm unlikely to miss many $1,500 mixed game events. I should play all the PLOs, maybe not the 50K, but all the ones up to that. I probably will play the PPC again. I will play no limit hold them up to 10K, maybe a couple 25Ks. So yeah, I'll play a lot of stuff.
Nice. Well, and you mentioned mixed games. You had mentioned earlier also the bracelet you'd absolutely love to win, either the main or the 50K PPC. You know, a lot of folks, you know, in that high roller scene in particular tend to be you know, very straight, narrow, nose to the grindstone with no limit hold'em. You love the mixed games. What is it you love about mixed games and honing your skills in multiple different variants and disciplines?
It's just more fun to me. It's more dynamic. You're especially when you play like an 8-game or 10-game mix where the game's changing every 6 hands. It's activating different parts of your brain. You have to be, you know, you have to have, first of all, a lot of people are pretty good in some of the games, but weaker in others. So you have to have this skill set where you're at least reasonably good in all the games to do well in these sorts of tournaments, which I just think is cool. And I mean, to me, it's poker. Poker's not just No Limit Hold'em, even though No Limit Hold'em's become the most popular game by far. There's been a lot of other variants over history. I just think it's fun to play them all. And I think if you want to say you're a true all-around poker player, you sort of need to play all the games. Having said that, I recognize that Hold'em is by far the biggest game, and that if you're somebody who is dominant in Hold'em, even if you're just somebody who's dominant in one aspect like Hold'em Cash or Hold'em Tournaments, that takes a tremendous amount of work and dedication, because there are so many more people competing to be that than there are in say mixed games. But I don't know. I just like to play different games. It's more fun for me. And I recognize that maybe, you know, in a way that's probably hurt me. Like if I had just focused on say just PLO and trying to be the best PLO player in the world, maybe monetarily it would have been a better move, just playing really high stakes PLO cash all the time. But I just enjoy these different challenges, and WSOP is like the perfect, it's like the pinnacle of all this, because you just have this opportunity to play pretty high stakes in just a ton of different games.
But, well, you're definitely preaching to the choir, and it's always fun, you know, even someone so accomplished to hear the fire burning within, you know, the desire to achieve and to win. It's pretty awesome to hear that. We've obviously talked a lot about tournaments. Let's talk a little bit about cash games. How often do you play cash games? And, you know, I guess you said that it's sort of changing a little bit. You're becoming more tournament oriented now, but is there sort of an ideal mix, or, you know, does it affect the way you sort of prepare? Like, you know, how does that work as far as the balance tournaments and cash games for you?
Well, I'm really, it's crazy. I never would have thought this, but I really very just focused on tournaments right now. Part of that is cash game action is so private, and there's all this politics for the bigger stakes games. I mean, having said that, I'll still jump in a cash game here and there when I have the time. But like, for instance, this month there's tournaments almost every day. And so I kind of had a couple of days off. I've got a 10K PLO today, and then I kind of had a couple of days off the next 2 days. And I was thinking, you know, maybe I'll play cash, but then I saw the Wynn has a 3K no limit and a 2K no limit. So I'm just going to jump in those and then get to that PLO series at Aria. So I'm just, I'm really enjoying the tournaments right now. I like that there's no privatization to them. It's whoever shows up plays. I was a cash game grinder for a very long time, and, you know, I'll still play cash games, but I don't want to feel like I'm just going to play just for the sake of playing. Whereas with tournaments, I feel kind of excited to play each one.
Right. Right. Well, one thing we know, it's always a little bit harder to find the mixed games being spread, be it in tournament or cash game settings. And of course, you know, there's tons of training materials out there for Hold'em, but not necessarily as much mixed games. So a good cash game can help you sort of get the reps in. It's a long wind up there, but I did have the good fortune to play with you before in an 8160 mixed game over there at Resorts World. A lot of fun, definitely challenging. Yep. Having you there on my left, that's good stuff. In what way would you say your particular approach, or, you know, the ideal approach, should be different to a mixed cash game versus a mixed tournament? When I say mixed tournament, like something like an 8-game or a 10-game.
Yeah. So cash games, you're, especially in these limit cash games, you're really just trying to maximize every decision and take every little bit of EV you can, and embrace the variance. And in tournaments, that's not always the case, because the value of the chips you gain is not as valuable as how sort of the lack of value, or I don't know the best way to say this, but the chips you lose, you know, that hurts you a lot more than the chips you gain helps you in tournaments a lot of the time, just based on the way payouts work and everything. And then when you get into like close to the bubble, then it kind of flips, and having a big stack You got to play more hands. Having a medium, shorter stack, you have to be more conservative. So yeah, the games are still the same, but you have to have those like tournament skills of understanding when to play small ball, when to play a lot of hands, when to play less hands. It just kind of comes, you can learn those skills playing no limit tournaments, and then you just carry those over to mixed games. But yeah, in a cash game, you're just taking every thin spot, every slightly plus EV 3-bet or whatever it is.
Right. And I think your answer is very instructive as well when you say like a true complete poker player does really need to understand the variance, needs to understand both tournament cash game play, because there are these little sub niches that, you know, one particular variant or one particular, you know, fixed limit game will teach you that you can apply to a no limit game. Very instructive answer there. Thank you.
Yeah. And just quickly to sure. add on to that, that's mm-hmm. one thing I found studying poker is I might be watching a Hold'em video or a stud video, and I might learn something about Omaha or triple draw from watching a Hold'em mm. video or stud. You know, a lot of the concepts carry over in poker. And if you can kind of understand what an instructive point is from one type of poker, you can usually apply it to another type of poker too.
Nice. Cool. We'll do two more questions from me before we move into the community questions. Right. A little bit of a hot button topic, shot clocks. A lot of folks are talking about shot clocks, especially at the higher levels of the game. We know you're more of a fan of the chess clock kind of style of poker play. At what level, like, you know, tournament buy-in level, or, you know, do you think should be the lowest where some sort of a clock should be instituted?
That's a good question. I'm a huge fan of the clock in general. I'm a huge fan of faster play. So, you know, in an ideal world, you'd have a clock in every tournament, but I think it would take something away from some of the amateurs, and I think it would just be impractical to employ it in the lower stakes. So I think they're pretty much doing it in most 10Ks and above right now. It's less of a concern in the mixed game tournaments, but they're pretty much doing it in all these 10K and limits and above, which is great. So I think that's a fine, maybe buy-in level, maybe go down to 5Ks or something like that. I think they need a slightly better system. So yeah, something like a chess clock where you have a certain amount of time for the level or however you do that. Or at least, you know, they have these 30-second extensions. I think it should at least be at 15 seconds pre-flop and then maybe 30 on all the other streets. Mm-hmm. I definitely don't think you ever need 30 seconds if it folds to you in the cutoff and you're deciding whether you want to raise or not. That should not be a spot where you're taking 30 seconds. So of course people are like abusing the system as much as they can. They'll take 29 seconds on every decision. I don't like slow play. I think it's just bad for the game. I think it's bad for the casual players. I think it's just a net negative. The other thing is if you're a really good player, you should want to get more hands in. In my opinion. I mean, I understand there's times maybe near the bubble where like it makes sense to play slower because you want to get in the money. But in general, if you're someone who's tanking level three and you're a good player, like, what are you doing?
Right.
I don't know. I don't get it.
Well put. Last question for me. I mean, I mentioned before, it's really, you know, awesome as a lover of poker to see someone who, you know, not just successful what they do, but still has that burning passion, loves the game, loves talking about it, playing it, studying it. If you weren't a professional poker player, if that wasn't an option for whatever reason, what sort of interest or pursuit would sort of strike your fancy? What would you think you'd probably be doing for a living, or at least that's something that would take up, you know, this much of your time?
Yeah, I've thought about that. There's a few different things. Part of me thinks I could be a teacher. I do enjoy coaching and... Yeah, I thought maybe teaching could be something I would do. I like to write. I just have this pipe dream of eventually writing this book that I talk about, but I don't really put the effort in. So I need to at some point put some words on paper there, or else it's just an empty dream. And then maybe something more similar to poker, like day trading or something like in the finance world where you're working with numbers a lot. Cool. A few different things. Few different paths I may have taken, but I do think that poker is a good fit for me.
Cool. Well, you have piqued my curiosity. Can you give a general categorization what that book would be about?
Yeah, it would just be kind of autobiographical, but the idea being it would be an insight into the world of a poker player. Ooh. But not from the poker strategy perspective, but from the lifestyle perspective.
Nice. Okay, cool. So I'd read it. I'd pick up a copy. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. Folks, in this segment of the show, we turn to you guys, our Cards Chat community, to see what questions you wanted to ask our guests. We do have a dedicated thread on the Cards Chat forums for this. So as we announce who our future guests will be, please be sure to send in your questions. A new name here, Ephraim123. Thank you so much for sending this one in. We got a few, so we'll try to get through as many as we can in the time we've got left. Alex, Ephraim123 wants to know, I guess I'll add, on a scale of 1 to 10 or something like that, or on some sort of scale, how aggressive do you consider yourself as a poker player?
That's a good question. I'd say 7.5. Yeah. So I'm definitely on the more aggressive end of poker players, but I don't think I'm insane.
Okay. Interesting. Nice rating there. Mm-hmm. One more from Ephraim123. Does having studied economics help you with poker?
No, I didn't pay a lot of attention in most of my college classes, and especially not in my economics classes.
Not afraid to give real answers. I like it. Okay. Zoro222 is a new question asker. I think you were on our last episode as well. Thank you for submitting these. Alex, Zoro wants to know, what advice would you give someone, again, the rare few who get to breathe this rarefied air, who have the opportunity to play in the main event final table as far as handling all of the craziness and hoopla surrounding it?
Yeah, I would say try to have some good friends there who can keep you grounded. And I would say do whatever you can to get sleep between the days. Exercise a little bit in the morning. I didn't go for like a really intense exercise, but I move your body in some way in the morning. Do whatever you can to eat. So basically just take care of all your vital needs. That it's easy to, you know, the anxiety takes over or you just like forget to take care of your basic needs, but just try to take care of those so you can be the best version of yourself at the table. And the poker will come, I think, because you're going to be in that moment. And at least for me, I felt like an elevated sense of being kind of in the zone, which I think would happen to most people in that situation, but you really have to just take care of everything else away from the table.
Yeah, well, take it from Alex. He's been there. He's done that. I would add, not having been there, not having done that, but if I made the final table, that means I've got money. I'd pay someone to help me with that. Get me my food. Make sure I'll keep me accountable. So
that's a good idea.
Spend a few bucks there. Okay. Another from Zoro222. Where's your favorite place to play poker?
Right now, I'd say it's the studio here in Vegas. Not that Vegas is my favorite city by any means, but I mean, practically speaking, this is where I'm playing the majority of my poker. And the studio is just, it's just a great setup. It's awesome. Very comfortable.
Awesome. Yeah. You know, a good proud Canadian, Zora wants to know, what's your favorite NHL team?
The Leafs or the Knights, but I'm not a huge hockey fan. But I grew up watching Leafs games. And then, you know, since I've spent a lot of time in Vegas lately, I've been to a lot of Knights games and they're a lot of fun. So I'm more of a casual hockey fan, but those would be the two teams I root for.
Nice. Whereabouts in Canada are you from? I forget originally.
Halifax. I was born in Toronto, but I grew up in Halifax.
Okay. I guess that's the closest team. Like there's no real closer team to Nova Scotia.
Montreal and Boston would be closer geographically. And then Pittsburgh is one that a lot of people are fans of because Sidney Crosby's from Halifax area.
Sure. Good.
But Toronto is also, you know, pretty popular team within Halifax.
Sure. Nice. Okay. Acid Burn FX, one of our creative question askers, always asks some very interesting ones. Wants to know, Alex, what is the worst job you ever had?
So this is like, I don't know if this is embarrassing or not embarrassing, but I haven't really had a full-time job. I had a part-time job in college calling alumni, asking them for money. I've been a pro poker player since I was 21. So any job I've had, I mean, I babysat as a teenager to make some money. I've done some just like random one-off jobs. I really have not had like the one I did at college where I was working maybe 12 hours a week calling alumni asking for money. That's the closest thing I've had to a job. So yeah, I've just been a poker player.
Interesting. And I imagine you like the freedom that that type of lifestyle affords you.
Yeah. I mean, it would be very difficult to switch to something else, especially something where I had a boss after having done this for all these years.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, I hear you loud and clear. Not a professional player, but someone also in charge of my own time. It's very tough to go back. I can confirm yeah. that. One more from Acid Burn FX. What is your most prized possession and why?
Another interesting question. I'm not a big possessions person. I guess my car. I bought a car after the main event, Jaguar F-Pace 2020. Nice. It was a big upgrade over my previous car. And I'm not even a huge car guy, but if I had to say one thing was my most prized possession, it would have to be the Jag.
Cool. Yeah. Okay. Crystals, a fellow Canadian of yours, has some questions. How was it growing up on the East Coast of Canada as far as getting into poker?
Yeah, so we have a little casino there in Halifax. I just walked in when I turned 19 and started playing a lot. And that's where I honed my skills.
Wait, but like, why did you walk in? What is it about poker that made you want to play?
Well, I had been playing board games and card games my whole life, pretty much. And so I had watched poker on TV, the whole Moneymaker Effect 2003. Okay. I watched that. So I was already into poker by the time I turned 19. Mm-hmm. And then I went into that casino and, you know, I started doing pretty well right away. And yeah, but yeah, we built a whole community. There's a bunch of guys that were pros at the same time as me around then, and a lot of them are still some of my best friends. And yeah, we had a whole group there that would go in and play. And so yeah, we've definitely got a bit of a community from Halifax.
Nice. Cool. Okay, one more Canadian question from Crystals. Live poker in Canada is not what it is in the US. What do you wish you could see happen for poker in Canada over the next few years? I like this question.
What's going to happen for poker in Canada?
What would you like to see happen?
What would I like to see happen? It would be great if we got some bigger tournament series in Canada. I know there's some at Playground and there's some in Calgary. It would just be great to see that grow, see the numbers grow. I don't know if I have a great answer for that.
Okay.
Because I think there is already a reasonable established scene in Canada. Mm-hmm. I haven't played a ton of tournaments in Canada, but I know they used to have a WPT at Niagara Falls that was like a 5K and it was pretty big. And I don't know if they still do that anymore.
Interesting.
But it would be cool to have maybe a couple higher profile WPTs, maybe a 5K buy-in at some of these Canadian casinos. I think that'd be great. I would, you know, go out and support those.
Nice. Very cool. All right. We got two more question askers as we wrap up here. Baloo 1982. Thanks for sending this one in. I guess I'd have to modify it. Aside from the Poker Go studio, if you had to pick a particular casino and I guess place, city to play, which location which location is tops for you as far as playing a poker tournament?
Amsterdam is probably up there. The casino there is beautiful. The city is beautiful. They have a tournament series there called the Master Classics, which I haven't been to in a number of years, but I still think it's one of the best run tournament series anywhere. It's a lot of fun. They used to do this thing. I don't know if they still do it, but if you make the final table, the main event, you pick a song and you walk in with that song playing.
That's so cool.
And it's just a lot of fun. The Dutch are just a great group of people. So that I would say Amsterdam, and then the other place would be Melbourne. But I don't think they're doing the Aussie Millions anymore either. So
it's on hiatus. Yeah, those officially are really great
cities and fun places to play.
Nice. Very cool. Definitely good to get around and experience poker in different cultures, different places. In Amsterdam, yeah. I know they give away the, I think it's called the Bordia or something like that. That's like the plate that you win if you win the Masters Classics. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Good stuff. Last question here, and I like this one. Good one to end off on. Bermejoga, thank you very much for sending in this question for Alex Livingston. Alex, you know, we talked a lot about poker, I'd say, over this hour. What do you like to do in your free time or when you want to relax and decompress after a long time playing poker?
Yeah, pretty much anything outside. I love to ski, golf, hike. I was actually just in Argentina for 2 weeks.
Ooh, nice.
Doing some hiking and just seeing the city. So yeah, travel and get outside basically would be my general answer. And then plenty of individual things within that.
Nice. So it's, we always talk about balancing your ranges. That sounds like a pretty good balance, to sitting inside at the felt, most of the time.
Yeah, definitely.
And I know you got a lot of felt to sit at, so we'll just wrap it up. Yeah. Thank you everyone who sent in questions for Alex Livingston. Friendly reminder to all of you out there in the Cards Chat community, we'd love to see you submit your questions for our future podcast guests in the dedicated thread on the forums. Guys, please be sure to give us a good review on iTunes and spread the word via your social media channels if you like the show. Alex, before we let you go and get that workout in before poker, anything else you'd like to share with the Cards Chat audience?
No, nothing I can think of specifically. I feel like we covered a lot. But yeah, I'm excited to keep this journey going. I guess the last thing I'll say is that I feel lucky that I'm still doing something that I love to do for a living. So I don't take any of that for granted. And I at some point, maybe I won't still have this passion for poker and I'll move on to something else, but it's still there right now. So still trying to move forward.
Nice. Well, so good. Amazing self-awareness. So important. And gratitude for the win. I love it. Thank you so much again, Alex Livingston. Thank you all for tuning in once again to another episode of the Cards Chat Podcast. I'm Robbie Straczynski. You can follow me on Twitter at CardPlayerLife. I wish you all a wonderful day.
Cards Chat, the friendliest poker podcast in town from the world's number one poker community.